So, brief recap. 1 Corinthians, Paul is dealing with, one, things that were written to him by Chloe's people, specifically dealing with divisions and factions in amongst the people. We covered that, and then getting into chapter 7, he starts dealing with things that were written to him, questions that they had. And so he deals with marriage, deals with what kind of lifestyle do you live after you're baptized, changes that need to be made, not made, specifically remain as you are, as what he talked about also in chapter 7. 8 through 10, talked about meat sacrificed to idols, being careful with our actions and dealing with those of a weaker conscience, of a more new faith. He gets into chapter 11. He deals with their partaking of the Lord's Supper and them coming together for the worse, not for the better. Then we move into 12. 12 through 14 is going to deal with these spiritual gifts. Now, as he dealt with 12 through 14, again, we brought up this idea of factions and divisions among them. 12:7, it says that these gifts are for the common good. He emphasizes that they come from the same Spirit, knowing that these Corinthians are surrounded by idolatry, have come out of idolatry. Goes on to talk about in the latter part of that, making analogy of the members of the body. We said parts because in our vernacular it maybe connotes a little more of an understanding. The idea of each individual part of the body comprises the body. He goes on to say in verse 27 of chapter 12, now you are Christ's body and individual members of it. So regardless of whether you have spiritual gifts or not, regardless of whether you have a specific type of spiritual gift that may be revered more, all are needed and comprise the body of Christ. He goes on to say in chapter 13 that spiritual gifts are nothing if they aren't used by love. It gives characteristics of this love that you should have for brethren, this more excellent gift, because spiritual gifts, it says in the latter part of chapter 13, are going to pass away. They serve their purpose, but love should abide. Love should always be acting in and amongst brethren. And so he's dealing with, again, this idea of factions and divisions and the idea of the wants, the haves and the have-nots. Get to the spiritual gifts. They came from the Holy Spirit. It wasn't of your own volition, and you didn't choose what you got. He gave as he saw fit. And so there's no reason to exalt yourself or hold yourself higher than others, because it wasn't of your own will or anything that you did. You get to receive those gifts. And these gifts should be used out of love. If you don't have love, you're nothing. It's not profitable. You're just a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal if you have these gifts and you're not using them with love. Get into 14. We see that there is a more desirable gift. What's that desirable gift? And what two gifts are kind of in contrast? Speaking in tongue versus prophecy. And so the beginning of chapter 14, we deal with this idea of prophecy being a more desirable gift than tongues. Why? It edifies. So it's not that tongues can't edify, but tongues, we talked about, what is it? What is a tongue? It's language. It's language that can be understood. We went to Acts chapter 2, talked about the different types of languages that they spoke miraculously there. It was of other nationalities, other nations. We see that in 9 through 12. You can flip over. We'll cover it here in a minute. Verse 21 as well. This idea of it is not gibberish, but tongues don't edify unless there's someone there to interpret. And so greater is the idea of prophecy. He goes on to say in verse 4 of chapter 14, one who speaks in a tongue edifies himself, but one who prophesies edifies the church. Now I wish that you all spoke in tongues, but even more that you would prophesy. And the greater is one who prophesies than the one who speaks in tongues, unless he interprets, so that the church may receive edifying. Okay, so we're dealing with these spiritual gifts, how they're being used in that assembly. Specifically, this entire context is going to be for edification. So dealing with the idea of what do you do with these spiritual gifts that have been given? How are they to be used? Not only comprehension-wise. So, hey, now you've got these spiritual gifts. This is how you should lay them out. But not being selfish with those. Well, I've got the spiritual gift. I want to show it off. I want to demonstrate my abilities. It's not just to be something of a selfish nature. These gifts are given for edification. We see that constantly through here. See that in verse 5. A good, thesis statement in chapter 14 is verse 26. At the end of it, it says, let all things be done for edification. That's what this context is dealing with as in regards to these spiritual gifts. Now we get down to verse 20. Now we got through this idea of tongues being a spiritual gift, but not edifying unless it's interpreted. So verse 18, I thank God I speak in tongues more than you all. However, in the church, I desire to speak five words with my mind so that I may instruct others rather than 10,000 words in a tongue. Then he gets into verse 20. So this is new material for us today. He says in verse 20, brethren, do not be children in your thinking, yet in evil be infants, but in your thinking be mature. So from here on out, we're going to deal with this idea of your spiritual maturity. Don't be children in your thinking, be children when it comes to evil, be infants, be try to be pure, innocent. But in your thinking, you need to be mature. This is going to be one of the two things that governs the next text, this and the idea of edification. You know, when he's talking about this, he's emphasizing maturity in using spiritual gifts and points to consideration of what effects one's action has on another and willingness and desire to make choices that are best for others, not simply to please oneself. That's what we need to be looking at in this context. He goes on to say in verse 21, in the law it is written, by men of strange tongue and by lips of strangers, I will speak to these people, and even so they will not listen to me, said the Lord. Again, here this idea of strange tongue and by lips of strangers. The King James Version, I think it just says other lips. The context here is other languages. We're going to speak, it's going to be spoken in that way. Verse 22, so then tongues are for a sign, not to those who believe, this is the not but idiom, but to unbelievers. So are tongues for believers? Yes, but more so for unbelievers here in that context. But prophecy, is for a sign, not to unbelievers, but to those who believe. Verse 23. Therefore, in the whole church, if the whole church assembles together and all speak in tongues and ungifted men or unbelievers enter, will they say that you're mad? But if all prophesy and an unbeliever or an ungifted man enters, he is convicted by all. He is called to account by all. The secrets of his heart are disclosed. And so he will fall on his face and worship God, declaring that God is certain among you. Let's move into verse 26. He says, what is the outcome then, brethren? And I'm going to read this with two different inflections. So in your New American Standard Bible, it's going to say, if that's what you're reading from, it's going to have a period at the end of the next statement that I'm going to make. I was doing some reading and comparing versions. Young's literal translation puts a question mark. And so we'll deal with that in just a sec. I don't think it's going to matter greatly either way. But he says after that, what is the outcome then, brethren? When you assemble, each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. The idea of question mark, that's what the Young's literal translation does. Maybe the idea of not accusing them of doing these things, but, you know, thinking about it, alluding to the fact that, you know, is this what you should do? But the punctuation given here, I think, is a better way of putting it, because he's already dealing with how they're using spiritual gifts, how they should use an orderly worship. And he says here, what is the outcome then, brethren? When you assemble, each one has a song, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. So it may be either the idea of, are you taking into consideration when this happens, or you are doing that now? Either way, it's dealing with the same thing. Now go back to verse 20. It says, brethren, do not be children in your thinking, yet in evil be infants, but in your thinking be mature. Are you considering when you come together? You all have a song, you all have a teaching, you all have a revelation, tongue or interpretation. Let it be done for edification. You have these spiritual gifts. We go back up here. But if the whole church in verse 23 is speaking in tongues and ungifted men walk in or unbelievers, they're going to say you're mad. Be spiritually mature. Recognize that these gifts are for the common good. Recognize that these gifts are meant for edification. So, again, that's the context here. You know, be spiritually mature. And when it comes down to it, tongues are an important spiritual gift, but prophecy more so because it can be understood. It can prick those hearts. Tongues needs an interpreter. So Mark may walk in and he may start talking in Spanish. And I'm like, no, Mark, you need an interpreter. But he's offended because this is a gift from God. Gift from God or not, one, you have the ability to control it. Two, it's for edification. Just because you have a gift doesn't mean that it shouldn't be used in a way other than God intended. Okay, and that's what he's dealing with here. We're dealing with this idea of orderly worship. Let all things be done for edification and out of love. Again, we talk about this, out of love. Any questions or comments? Okay. You'll have your chance. Then we move into 26 through, let's say, 36. So I'm going to read this context for a second. Verse 26, I'm going to read this again and then keep going. What is the outcome then, brethren? When you assemble, each one has a psalm, has a teaching, has a revelation, has a tongue, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. If anyone speaks in a tongue, it should be by two or three, by two or at the most three, and each in turn, and one must interpret. But if there is no interpreter, he must keep silent in the church, and let him speak to himself and to God. Let two or three prophets speak, and let the others pass judgment. But if a revelation is made to another who is seated, the first one must keep silent. For you can all prophesy, one by one, so that all might learn and all might be exhorted. And the spirits of prophets are subject to prophets. For God is not a God of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. The women are to keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are to subject themselves, just as the law also says. If they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home. For it is improper for a woman to speak in the church. Was it from you that the word of God first went forth, or has it come to you only? I'll read verse 37. If any one of you thinks he is a prophet or spiritual, let him recognize that the things which I write to you are the Lord's commandment. Okay, so now we've moved into this context of orderly worship, specifically two words that are in contrast. What two sayings, phrases are in contrast here? It's either one or the other. Speak or keep silent. Okay. So if we want to understand what they're talking about here, what do we look at? We look at the context. So how do you define speak in this context? Is it talking? Okay. Okay, so those are examples, preaching, talking to the congregation. You said speaking to the assembly, addressing the assembly. Okay, is there more than just that? Ma'am? Prophesying. Okay, just in the sense of speak, though. I agree with the phrase addressing the assembly. Okay, asking questions. But you're doing that now, and Alex has done that, and Elizabeth and Susan have. either way, but you're are in this situation when you respond to a question that I have or offer a statement, are you not addressing the assembly as well? There's another component to this. Being in a place of authority. Okay, that's the key here. Okay, the key here is being in a place of authority. Y'all have addressed the assembly when y'all are talking with me. But I am the one leading the study this morning. When I'm leading singing or any of the other men are leading singing, they are the ones leading the assembly. Are you not addressing the assembly when you're singing back to me? Or singing back to everyone else? It's the idea of not just addressing the assembly, but having authority over the assembly. And this, our purpose here is to study. Yes, Rocky.
Verse 34,
Well, I'm not getting to the women yet. I'm like, if that's where you're going, I just want to talk about this idea of speak versus keeping silent. You're right. Verse 34 is a great way to see that this idea is a subjection. But I don't want to talk about the women yet. If that's where you're going, sorry to cut you off. Is that where you're going? Okay, we'll wait for a second. We want to understand what these two words or these two phrases mean before we get to that portion of it specifically. So speaking is addressing the assembly, but it's having authority over the assembly. You can look at verse 34 like Rocky said. It says the women are to keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are to subject themselves. It's being in subjection to. You see here earlier on, verse 28, but if there is no interpreter, he must keep silent. You're not supposed to, if you have a tongue and you don't have an interpreter, you're set out. You know, you're not having authority over. It's not for edification. That's this idea here. Speaking is addressing the assembly in a position of authority or having authority over. We have purposes in our worship. Our purpose here this morning is to study the Bible. There is interaction. Similar to what's going on here, there's interaction. We're going to see verse 21. Let two or three prophets speak and let the others pass judgment. What does it mean by passing judgment? Agree, disagree, examine what's being said, test what is being said. Yes, no, maybe? Yes. How's that done? Especially in these times. If something were said that isn't true or was from a false prophet, something they were dealing with, you see in 2 Corinthians, would you just let it calmly go on by or would you deal with it in the assembly? Look at Acts 15 real quick. For examining the scriptures, yes, the Bereans were commended. You can speak up. It's okay. But look at Acts 15 for a second. You've got this idea of circumcision going on. People saying people need to be circumcised. These Gentiles are also it's being revealed that the Gentiles are also are part of the promise that God made. And you go in here in verse 6. The apostles and elders came together to look into this matter. There was much debate. Peter describes what he went through with Cornelius. You get down to verse 12. All people kept silent and were listening to Barnabas and Paul, who were relating the signs and wonders God had done through them among the Gentiles. And then here you've got James who speaks up. And he says, verse 15, the words of the prophet agree. They're having this back and forth. All right, they're testing what is being said. And here's the way that he's testing it. I just bring this up from the standpoint of, that's what they're doing. They're passing judgment on what's being said. So the idea of having a Bible class like this and people talking, it's a matter of addressing the assembly in a position of authority. Keep going. Let's see here. Okay, we'll talk about this idea of keep silent then. So then how would you define keep silent? Does it mean you can't say anything? It means Michael can't reprimand Ruth, or Riley can't reprimand Ruth during, or not having a place of authority. These are in contrast. So if speak is addressing the assembly in a way that is leading the assembly, having a position of authority over, then keep silent has to do with submission, subject to. That's verse 34. That's what we're talking about here. It's a matter of orderly worship. Verse 40 talks about that. But all things must be done in an orderly manner. The idea of verse 26, let all things be done for edification. You know, this idea of speak is not an unknown or uncommon thing for it to be used in another way other than vocalizing. Exodus 4:16 talks about addressing the assembly. Exodus 16:12 talks about addressing the assembly in a position of authority. So you have this concept of speaking is not just verbalizing, but it means or connotes something more than that. Same thing with silence. This idea of silence isn't no vocalization at all. It has different connotations too. Look over at Luke 9 for a sec. Luke chapter 9, verse 36. It says, and when the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent and reported to no one in those days any of the things which they had seen. So when it says they had kept silent, what does that mean? Speak up. They didn't talk about it. It says it right there clearly after. And reported to no one in those days any of the things that they had seen. Doesn't mean that they didn't stop. They stopped talking altogether. That silence here is described by silence about what they had seen. Look over at Psalms 32. Psalms 32, verse 3. When I kept silent about my sin, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. What's silence here? Silence pertaining to what? His sin. Okay, wasn't I was silent altogether. This idea of silence doesn't have to mean not speaking at all, not vocalizing at all. Why is it important that we understand these the definitions of these words and how they're used in this context? Yes, I agree. We want to understand that one, that speak has more than one definition. We should define it based on the context, and we can harmonize that in other places, that speak isn't just defined as verbalizing things, because that's how people would just maybe go to a dictionary and use it. Two, like Alex said, it pertains to how we worship. If speak means no verbalization, then we are in an assembly now, specifically, that would be unfruitful or a sinful one, because there have been those who are speaking in this assembly, verbalizing when I'm in the position of authority, and it says to keep silent. It's understanding the context here. Specifically, we're going to get down to women. This is something that permeates a lot of congregations, is dealing with this issue. So we want to know what this issue of speaking versus keeping silent means in this context, and then make application for verse 34 and 35. So does anybody have a question or concern with the way we've defined these two words? No? Okay. All right. So then moving into verse 34, it says the women are to keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are subject to themselves, just as the law also says. If they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is improper for a woman to speak in church. Okay. I want to look at first off what we've talked about already. Verse 34, I tried to hold it out, and Rocky was doing a good job of showing this, but I didn't really want to talk about the women speaking in the assembly yet. But the idea of this idea of keeping silent, representing the idea of submissiveness or subjection, that's what it's talking about here. Not permitted to speak, but to subject themselves. Okay, the idea of being submissive when they're keeping silent. Something I want to look at, too, for a second. Sally, would you read verse 34 for us, please, from the King James Version?
Let your women keep silent in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak, but they are commanded to be obedient, as also saith the law.
Okay, did anybody hear the different translation in verse 34? Obedient, okay. Here, I'll read it a little louder. Maybe this will help. Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but they are to be submissive, as the law also says. That's the New King James Version. How is that different than what you may have in a version that you're reading? Okay, it says, let your women. Okay, that's what I'm looking to emphasize. Not that the other stuff is wrong, but let your women. That's interesting, right? Okay, what is he talking about? You can look at the Greek, but look at 35. That's all you need to look at. It says verse 35, if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home. Paul is writing to who? The Corinthians, right? It's Corinthian letter. I hope he's writing to them. Okay, he's dealing with what? Things that they wrote to him about. He's dealing with their specific issues, correct? Okay? This translation here, the women, you look up that in the Greek, you can look at other translations, he's talking about their women. Let your women. You see that this is dealing with something that's going on in their assembly. It has implication for us in our worship service today, but let's deal with what he's talking about to them first. Again, you look at their verse 35, and he's talking about if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home. What if you don't have a husband? Is he talking to all women? He's dealing with those women in that assembly. Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak. So something's going on. Something's going on where women in their assembly are speaking up in a way that is not being submissive to the one in authority. Maybe it's that prophecy is going on and a wife is speaking up and usurping the authority of her husband, wanting to ask questions about it while he's speaking. Because you look at verse 35, and if they desire to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home. We're not exactly sure what's going on, but we can see that he's dealing with those women in that assembly. And the idea that it was the wives of husbands in that assembly. If they want to learn something, whatever they're asking apparently can be asked at home in a way that is okay by God. But in the assembly, the way it's being asked is not in subjection or submissive. Yes, Sally.
35 says in the King James, "For it is a shame for women to speak in the church."
Yes, ma'am. I'm not saying that. How did we define speak? Having authority over, which is what this is dealing with, correct? So what we'd want to do is keep our vernacular, keep our definitions of these words throughout the entire context. Two, we want to see what Paul is dealing with specifically there, and then we want to make application in our worship assemblies today. So one, speak, having authority over when addressing the assembly. Two, keep silent, being of subject to or submissive to. Yes, Alex. Now, problem with that is I don't have sovereign authority. I have delegated authority. Who has sovereign authority? The right to rule? That's God. This is from God. If you want to view it as misogynistic, you need to read the context and you need to make application here. But, you know, we're going to look at 1 Timothy in just a second. But this is how God set forth. I don't think it's misogynistic at all. It's how they choose to interpret this passage. If we're interpreting it this way, the idea of being subject to or submissive to is something that we should all do when somebody else is in a position of authority addressing the assembly. Now we're going to get to specifically women being in a position of authority in the assembly is an added step to this. So women are to keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but are to subject themselves, just as the law also says. What did the law say concerning this? Now, I'll be honest. Y'all may have a passage. I couldn't find a passage that showed that specifically that women are to be completely silent in the assembly. We do have principles showing that man has authority over woman, and that in the assembly, that man is to lead the assembly. We're going to get to 1 Timothy in a second, but I do want to look at in the Old Testament for a second. Look over at Numbers. I think it's Numbers 27. I'm dealing specifically with addressing the assembly. Yes, it does go back to that. That's where kind of 1 Timothy is going to play a part. But I'm talking about specifically women being in a position of authority in the assembly. He says the law, and I'm going to look at it from both positions. But we're also dealing with we're also dealing with, there's more than just women in the assembly that need to be submissive or being subject to the person leading. Now we want to get to why women are not to be in a position of authority in the assembly, period. But I want to look at something first before we get there. Maybe I'll either clarify or you can ask another question once you get to second. First Timothy. But give me a minute. Maybe it'll clear it up. Yes, sir. Husbands. And we're going to, if I remember correctly from my studies from hopefully last night, I've slept since then, but 1 Timothy will just deal with that to an extent. What I'm looking at from this perspective is, I don't know anywhere in the law where it says a woman cannot address the assembly. The principle is that man is over woman, which we've just discussed. And so I want to look at a situation in the Numbers where it talks about women addressing the assembly for a second. And then get to the idea of women being submissive to their husbands, not having authority over their husbands, and this principle abiding in our worship today. That makes sense. Let's go to Numbers 27 for a second. Numbers 27, verse 1, it says, "Then the daughters of Zelophehad, sure, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of Manasseh and the sons of Joseph, came near. And those are the names of the daughters, Mahila, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah." Don't hold me to those names. You see them in writing, but don't hold me to that pronunciation. "They stood before Moses and before Eleazar the priest and before the leaders and all the congregations at the doorway of the tent of meeting, saying, 'Our father died in the wilderness, yet he was not among the company of those who gathered themselves together against the Lord in company of Korah, but he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. Why should the name of our father be withdrawn from among his family because he had no son? Give us possession among our father's brothers.' So Moses brought their case before the Lord, and then the Lord told Moses." Okay, so just want to look at that from the standpoint of here. You have daughters addressing an assembly, okay, and there's no condemnation of it.
See,
yes, sir.
There's a danger here and connotation of words.
Yes, sir.
Addressing the assembly is different than speaking in the assembly.
Okay.
It can be.
Yes, sir.
And so addressing the assembly, they were talking to Moses and the leaders. They weren't talking to the congregation. They weren't in a position where we're the teachers. They were asking questions to Moses and the leaders. I know that's what you mean, but I'm saying addressing the assembly, when I think of it in 1 Corinthians 14, I think of it like the prophet or the tongue speaker in the previous verses, where he is teaching. He's in a role of teaching. But I'm just saying there's a danger in addressing having a connotation that you may not think.
Well, so what I'm trying to... Yes, I completely agree. It's the idea of words or phrases on which thoughts travel. Y'all heard that before. I continue to say this because as I was studying this last night, when you say addressing the assembly, that means different things to different people, which is why I continue to emphasize having authority over. I have in my notes in my Bible, it says addressing the assembly. But when somebody answers me, somebody else may view it as you're addressing the assembly as much as you're answering a question, or you're making a comment on a point that I've made. Is it not addressing the assembly? I'm using it, and I'm trying to make sure I clarify this, because I agree it can mean different things in the different places. Here, When I say they are speaking in the assembly, but they have no position of authority. They are speaking to, here it talks about the leaders, Moses and Eleazar, but they're not doing it from a position of authority. And so that's what I'm trying to emphasize, making sure that it's understood that this is the way the phrase, the way, the understanding of the phrase. Yes, Rocky. Yes, sir.
And what you're saying is that applies to the first part of the statement. Let women keep silent in the church. They ask the question, well, where are the laws that say that? That statement, just the law says, is really referring to what happens after the flood. Let the women, wives, be subject to the husband. That's what he's addressing. That's what he's talking about, just as the law says, not to the first part of the statement.
But to the second part of the statement. Okay, well, thank you. That's a better clarification of that. Let's go over and go over to 1 Timothy 2 for a second, because we're gonna talk about that. Go 1 Timothy 2 for a second. Again, this idea of addressing the assembly can connote different ideas, and so when it's talked about addressing the assembly or speaking in the assembly, addressing the assembly may to you connote either me being up here in a position of authority, teaching, leading in study, leading a prayer, those sort of things. It could mean talking in the assembly. Just want to clarify again the way I'm using it. So I continue to say addressing the assembly, but in a position of authority, because to me, addressing the assembly could mean either or. So I'm trying to clarify that. We get over to 1 Timothy chapter 2. So when you deal with this, people will go here and say, well, you know, women aren't to speak in the assembly because of this as well. It says in verse 11, a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness, but I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. For it was Adam who was first created and then Eve, and it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. But women will be preserved through the bearing of children if they continue in faith and love and the sanctity of the self-restraint. Again, here, this idea of going back to Genesis 2 and 3, the idea of a woman being submissive to her man, which is the words that are used in Genesis, but understanding of husband and wife. So what does he mean by a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness in verse 11? How would you go about determining that? Context. Let's look at the context. Okay. A woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. If you go back up to verse 2 for a second, because quietly is used in 11 and 12. But look back at verse 2 for a second. Or I'll start in verse 1. First of all, then I urge the entreaties and prayers and petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and all who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. What's quiet there mean? Not speaking? Peaceable. That's the King James Version. We want to look at the context here for a second. So down in verse 11, a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. The idea of quiet, again, he mentions submissiveness, but go to verse 12. But I do not allow women to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. This here in verse 12, it says not or. This is it's translated either or nor when you look at it. But this not nor is a way to better emphasize what comes after the not. So if you say here, but are not allowed, allow a woman to teach nor exercise authority, the nor specifies what comes before it. So allow a woman to teach nor specifically exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. Verse 11. Submissive, okay, peaceable. That's the context here. Then we have this idea of it going back to the beginning that a man is over a woman. And so, again, this context here isn't saying that a woman can't verbalize. Again, it's being subject to being submissive, being peaceable. Does that make sense? Questions, comments? Yes, ma'am. Ask your question. That's what I'm here for. So hold on. 1 Corinthians, back to 1 Corinthians 14 for a second. 14, and we're going to go back to 34 and 35. So for Don's question. Oh, comment.
So when you were working on as the law also said.
Yes.
And the women keep silent, how that translates, and but are to be subject just as the law also said. If we go to Ephesians 5:22.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about wives being in subjection to their own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is also the head of the church. That is not, that statement or that instruction, not statement, that instruction is not that wives cannot talk or explain their thoughts, but it's to be done in a matter of respect. Because of the position of authority, the person that is standing in front of the group has the authority. She does not have authority. She will not have authority in addressing the assembly for that purpose. And she's to be reminding and keeping herself in subjection, that to be respectful for the person in authority as the husband or as the person leading the assembly. She won't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, what he is saying. You are to keep yourself in subjection to the person who has authority and not try to replace them.
I agree. You ever muddy the waters at times? And so what Rocky's explanation a second ago, especially dealing with the idea of let your women are to keep silent, and then dealing with the idea of subject themselves just as the law also says, gives you a better understanding of be subjective, be in subjection to, you know, your husbands in that context. Muddying the waters wise, I was just looking at it from the standpoint of nowhere did I see that it says in the law that a woman cannot speak in an assembly. Just didn't do a very good job of clarifying that. We are appealing back to subjection of husbands and wives. Rocky?
Just to say something obvious, the woman is singing a song in the assembly. She's speaking, she's addressing the assembly. And it just tells us that this speaking is not like bodily communicating in the assembly.
Okay, 1 minute, Neil. Give me 1 minute. Okay, so to finish this up, he says, you know, therefore, my brethren, desire earnestly to prophesy and do not forbid to speak in tongues, but all things must be done properly and in an orderly manner, dealing with what's going on in their assembly. So that's the context of what's going on. So let's make sure we keep that in mind, especially from 34, 35. Two, if you have any questions with what I said this morning, feel free. We're in a limited time frame, and this is something that is questioned a lot. So if y'all have a question about what I said, obviously, I want clarification. You disagree, come get with me. I would like to be able to discuss that further. All right, thanks, Neil.